Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a channel called Wretched, which you know is a nod to the Christian idea that all humans are garbage and so should be grateful that God would be nice enough to give us any way out of him torturing us forever. He didn't owe us crappy humans that kind of courtesy. And this guy isn't just wrong. He is aggressively wrong. If there were a living personification of the Dunning-Kruger effect, this guy would be it. Let's take a look.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hello, this is Wretched Radio. Evolution, can you trust it?
Evolution is just a process that happens. It'll continue happening whether you trust it or not.
I don't think so, not when they're constantly changing their mind.
Would you prefer that we just not learn anything new ever? Science is an ever-changing process, honing in on what is actually true and discarding that which is found to be false along the way. Sticking dogmatically to a conclusion when evidence starts mounting against it is not the way to make scientific progress. But ignoring that for a moment, does that mean that if scientists hadn't changed their minds about anything to do with evolution since Darwin proposed it, then we could safely trust it?
Tony,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to tell you a story about something that happened to me a year ago.
Okay.
I was at Graceland, and the craziest thing happened. I ran into an Elvis impersonator.
No.
So weird. Went to sixth grade with the guy. That's just something else. I'll tell you, that was amazing. Wait a second. Hold it. Sorry. That actually was fourth. Hold on.
It wasn't second, Graceland,
second,
it was...
Second grade, it was.
Yeah.
Did I say Graceland? I meant Disneyland.
I see what you're getting at, but there is a huge difference between not being able to trust someone's recollection of an event because of their faulty memory and us making scientific progress as we learn more about the world around us. A better analogy would be something like computer technology. It keeps changing. Can we trust it? Well, yeah, we learn how to make better hardware, and we do so quickly that often shiny new hardware can be made to feel obsolete in a matter of months. Does the fact that a new graphics card is released typically every 6 to 8 months make graphics cards untrustworthy? Nope. Usually the new ones are significantly better than the old ones, though often there are pretty bad driver-based glitches for the first few weeks after release. But then the driver software keeps changing. Guess you can't trust that. You should stick with the tried and true glitchy driver software. Do you see how ridiculous this argument gets when you apply it to something scientific?
It keeps moving. At some point you'd go, you're not a reliable source. Why don't we say that about these so-called historical scientists?
Because, firstly, evolutionary biologists are not historical scientists. And secondly, human memory is known to be severely flawed. So to compare actual measurable scientific progress with a guy who can't keep his story straight is just patently absurd.
Which are all that evolutionists are. All you can tell from a dead bone is something with a bone died.
No, you can actually tell a lot from a bone. Now, of course, when fossil hunting, finding a complete skeleton is ideal and almost never happens, but there is a lot of leeway in between one single bone and a complete skeleton that allows us to learn quite a bit about whatever creature we're talking about. And, in fact, we can use fossils to organize these previously living things by their characteristics, both shared and unique. And a funny thing happens when you do that. It starts to line up and form a nested hierarchy. Not only does it form a nested hierarchy, but it forms a hierarchy that looks an awful lot like a family tree. Huh. How about that? Almost like no one single bone is going to tell the whole story, and so we don't just look at isolated individual bones when trying to reconstruct the story.
And yet, they make up fanciful tales, and they change them constantly.
Well, in the case of the fossil record, it's because, as you pointed out, there's a lot that we don't know about any one individual organism from any one particular fossil specimen. So as we find new specimens of the same species, we learn new information about that species and so adjust our picture of them accordingly.
Oh, Todd.
This one is a pistol. Yes, Joseph.
They're moving towards greater accuracy.
Oh, so you do know that, do you? You know that as science progresses, things change? You realize that humanity's ability to learn new things is why we keep learning new things? So why are you spouting nonsense about not being able to trust science because it changes?
I realize. Well, when you get there, let me know.
Dude, it's science. There is no there that when we get there, we're done. Humanity will never know everything that it is possible to know. Imagine if people like you had won out before the germ theory of disease was developed. A theory that still to this day keeps changing, by the way. A prime example that everyone should be familiar with by now is vaccination. The first ever publicly available messenger RNA vaccine is being administered worldwide as we speak. That's a change. The first vaccine was a smallpox vaccine, and it was mostly just an intentional infection with the milder virus cowpox, after which you would then have immunity to the much more deadly smallpox. And no, the mRNA vaccines do not edit your DNA. A typical vaccine would inject proteins directly into your body, which would stimulate an immune response and create antibodies to fight off that infection. An mRNA vaccine injects messenger RNA into your body, which then causes your cells to produce these proteins, which then stimulate an immune response. Contrary to anti-vax beliefs, it is actually not possible for mRNA to interact with DNA. In protein synthesis, DNA gets transcribed into mRNA, which is then translated into a protein in the cell's ribosome, and once it is done, it degrades. So the mRNA vaccine just puts some mRNA into your cells so that they produce the proteins that would normally be in the vaccine itself. The advantages to that are that, firstly, we are really good at making mRNA, so the development is fast. In fact, the first mRNA vaccine for COVID was developed within days of the SARS-CoV-2 genome being made public, and it's been in testing ever since. Another advantage is that all they need in the vaccine is some delivery solution. Nothing like the adjuvants of a typical vaccine that are meant to provoke a worse immune response, so no thimerosal or aluminum to frighten off the anti-vaxxers, just the mRNA to build the COVID spike protein. That's it. That's a big development in the field of science covered by germ theory, but I don't hear you complaining about that. Though, to be fair, it wouldn't surprise me if you did complain about it.
Because in the meantime, Hey, I need to get to the White House. Well, I can tell you how to get there. Why don't you just jump into your car and drive about 7,000 miles to the east?
Yeah, you know what? That's actually a decent analogy. I mean, 7,000 miles doesn't work unless they built a bridge from Fiji to North America that I'm not aware of, but let's go with it. When you start a cross-country road trip, you typically don't know whether you will be turning left or right onto Pennsylvania Avenue to get to the White House when you're done. You just need to know which direction to go to point you in a general Washington-ish direction. So if you're in California, drive 3,000 kilometers east is a good starting point. But as you get closer to DC, you then need the directions to get more and more specific until you eventually end up at the White House itself.
I'll be adjusting those directions
as we go.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm leaving on a road trip, I don't have the whole route memorized. I just know the general direction I want to be pointed in, and it will get more specific as I go. Even pre-GPS, this is how it worked. I was the navigator when my father took me on a 3-week road trip of the UK. I didn't figure out the specifics of where we'd go once we got to the next town until we were pretty close to the town. I'd just make sure that the highway we were on would actually take us to that town, and then we'd work it out as we went.
But don't worry, we're getting better at this. Okay, when you got it figured out, then let me know. In the meantime, you merely have an idea, not even a theory.
You say, not even a theory, as though a theory is some lowly thing that can just be readily dismissed until someone gets better evidence for it. But it's not. A theory is one of the most scientifically robust categories that an idea can be in.
From the Wall Street Journal, this is the big evolutionary story. Fossil points to a vanished human species in the Himalayas. I will just read from two different articles. One is from the Wall Street Journal. The other one is from National Geographic. Absolutely fantastic. And I don't mean like, that's incredibly good. I'm talking about ridiculous.
Yes, I'm sure that it'll be more ridiculous than your show has been so far. Carry on.
A fossil jaw. Stop. A fossil jaw.
Yes, a fossil jaw.
That's it.
That's it?
One fossil of one jaw.
Okay, guess we can call it a day then. See you next time.
And now, we've got a brand new theory.
Damn, he's still going. No, it wasn't a brand new theory. It's a new piece to an old puzzle. I know he hasn't gotten to it yet, but let me spoil his surprise. It's a Denisovan jaw. We've known about the Denisovans since 2010, when we sequenced their genome from a finger bone and found them to be genetically distinct from Neanderthals and Homo sapiens.
Fossil points to a vanished human species in the Himalayas. One bone. That's all we have.
Yeah, one bone. That's all we have. But you know what? It contained collagen, which, through protein sequence analysis, can be used to reconstruct the DNA of the specimen, which was found to be Denisovan. Are you starting to see how we can use bones to learn more about the specimen than just the fact that it was an animal with bones?
Apparently, it was found from a monk that was wandering around the Himalayas, apparently, in 1980. Am I skeptical? If you brought that into a courtroom, they'd go, that leads kind of cold.
Okay, but as I mentioned, they didn't just see a jawbone and declare it to be a Denisovan because that's what they wanted. They analyzed the protein sequences in order to figure out what it was. The article you're reading from is written in a narrative style, so it's not exactly trying to get all of the nitty-gritty details across, but they do mention that we know Denisovans exist because of their DNA. Sure, it doesn't mention anything about the protein sequence analysis of this jawbone, but what exactly is your goal here? Are you trying to say that Denisovans didn't exist? Because we have their genome. We know they interbred with us because parts of their genome can be found in the genomes of some populations of humans. We know they interbred with Neanderthals because one of the Denisovan specimens that we have is a Neanderthal-Denisovan hybrid. And we use genetic evidence to determine all of this. The bones themselves are actually rather unremarkable.
That's not going to really stand up to much. A fossil jaw found in the Himalayan highlands of Tibet belongs to a vanished human species called Denisovans.
I prefer Denisovan to Denisovan, and I think I might be right. I did try to look it up. I went to a SciShow episode on them because they're usually pretty good about how they pronounce things, but I found this.
The Denisovans, or Denisovans, depending on whether, I don't know. I've always said Denisovans, but now I'm being told it's Denisovans.
Thanks for that, Hank. That was really helpful.
Deepening the mystery of human evolution in Asia. So wait a second.
Wait.
The headline is telling me the mystery deepens, and yet we're getting greater and greater clarity.
Those two things are not mutually exclusive. The best written mystery novels keep you guessing, not sure what's coming next, not sure of how all the different pieces of the puzzle fit together, until finally the reveal in the final chapters makes all the events make perfect sense. When you're in the middle of one of these stories, a new discovery might not make any sense based on your current understanding, but by the end of the book, it will make sense, unless you insist on holding on to your old ideas in spite of the evidence. This is actually one of the reasons that I'm not a huge fan of the Sherlock Holmes novels. Sure, they can be entertaining, but ultimately the final clue that puts it all together is something that Holmes noticed earlier in the story but that was never mentioned in the book, except at the ending during the wrap-up. So the reader had no way to arrive at the same conclusion as Holmes, making the twist ending seem artificially manufactured, in my opinion.
Which is it? It doesn't matter. We're talking about evolution.
Wait, why are you putting it down? You haven't even made it past the introductory paragraph. Are you just not even going to address the DNA that they mentioned later in that article because you just want to keep it to the "they just have one bone" narrative?
Until the new find, the Denisovans. All right, Tony, did you read any of these articles on the Denisovans?
I have not yet.
Uh-huh.
You know why?
If you had to guess, to recognize that there's an entire class of pseudo-humans because they think that these were sort of like people, but not exactly people. We're the only people left.
It was another species of hominid. Roughly speaking, about as close to modern humans as the Galapagos finches are to the mainland Ecuador finches. So, from a creationist perspective, they were the same kind as us. Close enough to interbreed, anyway. I wonder if they were created in God's image, too.
Yeah.
How many fossils do you think that they've got assembled to put together this notion that we've got an entire group of people and their migration patterns? Take a guess. What number of fossils?
Including this jawbone, there's 7.
Well, I would think you'd need hundreds or thousands.
No, you wouldn't need that many even if we weren't mostly figuring out what they were from DNA rather than just straight-up morphology. But yeah, you'd likely need more than what we have if it weren't for the DNA. In fact, 4 of the 7 specimens were discovered before 2010, 2010 being the year we first discovered that Denisovans were a thing. There wasn't enough of a fossil record of them to classify these fossils as a new species until we analyzed their genetics. But yeah, one complete specimen likely would have done the trick without genetics, or even a couple partial specimens. Though, when dealing with rare fossil species, it is important to keep in mind that if you only have 1 or 2 specimens, it is possible that the ones that you found were not good representations of the populations of which they were a part. They might be statistical anomalies. It's not likely, but it's possible. But the more specimens you find, the less likely that becomes.
How's about 4?
I would.
Where are you getting that number from? It is most definitely 7 right now. Rather, it's at least 7. It's always possible that there's 1 or 2 in the process of being examined as we speak, and they'll show up on the list tomorrow, or soon, anyway. But there's 7 that I can say for sure exist.
Oh, see, I'd have been high. I said knowing science today it was 12.
I take that back. I was wrong. It's 5.
No, you're still wrong. It's 7.
Until the new find, the Denisovans were known only through a fossil fingertip, 3 teeth, and a toe bone found in 2008.
Oh, wait, that's the same article. Okay, so you didn't just put it down, you skipped a bit. That's okay. It's the next paragraph where it starts getting into how we don't just call these teeth, toes, and fingers Denisovans until we get their DNA analyzed. Are you going to read that part?
That's it. Bring that into a court of law. Try to solve a mystery.
I'm convinced that you would lose this case because all the defense attorney or prosecuting attorney, you never made it clear which one you are in this analogy, but all they would have to do at this point is to just read the next paragraph, which begins the explanation of how you are completely wrong when you say that all we have are a couple of bones.
Somebody committed a murder in 19... No, somebody committed a murder in 2010. And you walk in with evidence like that, and the judge is going to say, son, you better go back to law school, because that ain't going to fly in this courtroom.
So genetic evidence doesn't work in courtrooms now?
You're embarrassing the whole institution.
Why, yes, you are embarrassing your whole institution. Well said.
3 teeth, a fingertip, and a toe bone from 2008. And they put together an entire narrative.
And there goes the rest of that page before he gets to the DNA. What was that about putting together an entire narrative without enough information?
It is thought that after the Denisovans... Notice the language of speculation. It is thought... We don't know.
Yeah, this is National Geographic we're talking about, not a science journal. The journalist's job is, unfortunately, more about generating clicks than reporting facts. So oftentimes they will extrapolate from what a study actually found in an attempt to make it more interesting. But in order to maintain a certain level of integrity, they have to hedge their language when doing so. In my experience, technical papers are much less speculative than the science reporting outlets. Usually the speculation in a technical paper is reserved for discussing areas of future research that may be indicated by their results, especially if they got results that they weren't expecting and aren't sure how to explain.
We're kind of writing a story here, and that's why when we find another toe bone, we need to fix it and tweak it. But don't worry, you can trust us.
How certain you are of an idea has no bearing on the truth of that idea. You can be absolutely 100% certain that your shoe is tied, while at the same time your shoe can be untied. I would rather have someone be honest about the fact that they are not 100% certain about something that has good justification than have someone that is 100% certain about something despite a complete lack of justification.
It is thought that after the Denisovans' ancestors split from their Neanderthal relatives at least 400,000 years ago, maybe 800,000, 1.2, it doesn't matter.
No, it absolutely does matter. But the information that puts a lower age limit on a speciation event does not necessarily also put an upper limit on it. So if we have the information that says they split 400,000 years ago, but it doesn't put an upper limit on it, then at least 400,000 years ago is the appropriate way to phrase that. That said, the upper limit is about 500,000 years. And fun fact, we not only have evidence that Denisovans interbred with both humans and Neanderthals, but that they also interbred with some other ancient hominid species as well. Amazing what you can learn by studying genetics. Too bad you seem intent on only reading the paragraphs around the ones that mention genetics.
The Denisovan ancestors split from their Neanderthal relatives 400,000 years ago, and they headed east into Asia. We get this narrative from a jawbone, three teeth, a fingertip, and a toe bone.
And a shit ton of genetic data from not only the Denisovans, but Neanderthals and even modern humans. If you find Denisovan genes in a human's genome, then you know that that human's ancestors got their freak on with some sexy, sexy Denisovans. Well, we find Denisovan genes in Aboriginal Australians, Papuans, Melanesians, and most Asians. So from this information, and by measuring how much Denisovan DNA ends up in which populations, we can figure out approximately where they lived. You can't breed with someone if you don't live nearby.
I'm sorry. What? You want us to believe that?
Yes, if it's not too much trouble. I mean, you do have the articles explaining it right in front of you, you just have to stop skipping the important paragraphs.
When they put it into a classroom textbook, and the kids believe it like a Bible.
Well, I should hope not. Remember that whole thing about science changing as time goes on? Yeah, textbooks change to reflect that. So the correct attitude is to accept what's in the textbooks as our best current understanding that is subject to revision should there be new discoveries.
We're not all that different from the university student evolutionists.
Yeah, you are. In universities, if they find it necessary to skip any of the subject matter, then they teach the most important parts and skip over the inconsequential bits, while you are sitting here doing the exact opposite of that and being all indignant about it on top of that.
They put their belief in scientists. We put our belief in God.
Well, as scientists can actually be shown to exist, I feel like they have a head start in actually earning some trust.
They trust textbooks, we trust the Bible.
We trust books that are subject to revision should any of their contents be found to contain errors. You trust a book that you insist is perfect as it is, despite several glaring and obvious errors.
We're all people of faith, aren't we?
Only if you're using a false equivalence to make faith mean trust based on previous experience when talking about science, and then switching over to belief without evidence for the religious side.
Modern humans first left Africa some, that's an approximation, 200,000 years ago, first as a trickle and then in waves.
Or maybe humans like to be together, so they would leave their homes together if they had to for whatever reason.
So they knew the bus schedule, apparently, out of Africa. They knew that at different times people traveled in greater numbers.
Come on, buddy. You literally have a story in your book about a population of 600,000 men, each with wives and children, so potentially adding up to about 2.4 million people, leaving the African country of Egypt into the West Asian land of Canaan, all at the same time. That's a pretty big wave. Maybe you should try and work this into your story somehow.
This is absolute nonsense.
You're right. The Exodus story is absolute nonsense. I'm sorry I tried to work it into the historical data for you. Won't happen again.
And what is really painful about this, these people are quite smart.
Oh, were you expecting me to say the same thing about this guy? Nah, I'll pass.
But they've got the wrong worldview, and they are desperate to try to suppress the truth and unrighteousness so they concoct fairy tales.
Why would I even want to suppress the truth? So I can sin? I don't even know what sin I would want to do that would be worth risking hell for. Aside from my YouTube channel, I lead a rather boring life.
Eventually, they encountered and interbred with Neanderthals in the Middle East.
And again, we know this from DNA evidence.
Staying at a three-bedroom condominium that only had 2.5 bathrooms, they procreated there, they ate hot dogs for breakfast.
What the fuck are you even talking about right now?
Why not?
Mainly because that technology for those things didn't exist back then.
As long as we're making up stuff.
Do I need to say it again? Do I need to point out again that this guy is not just being ignorant about this topic, but is actively leaving out the most important and relevant information in his presentation? The only way for him to be ignorant and not lying is if someone else copied the parts of the article that he's reading into a document without the DNA parts, and he never actually saw the original article. Seriously, though, don't take my word for any of this, and don't take his either. Just do some rudimentary fact-checking. It's not hard. And I can't help but wonder what people like this guy think they're accomplishing here. Are they really just hoping that nobody is ever going to think to read these articles for themselves? Sadly, I fear that may be true for most of his audience. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Neil Horsley, who says, "Look up Romans 1:20. This was on my recent video covering Alan Parr's attempt to prove that God exists, and quite frankly, I'm baffled. This person commented several times on that video, seemingly just saying whatever popped into their mind as they were watching, and yet somehow they missed the fact that the first third of the video was dealing almost exclusively with Romans chapter 1, including verse 20. I thought I explained pretty well why that line of argumentation is quite possibly the worst thing you could use to try and convince an atheist that God exists, because it involves you making claims about what is going on in the atheist's head, something that they surely know more about than you do. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the DNA that proves the Denisovan ancestry of my channel. If you'd like to be completely ignored by creationists, then you can join us on Patreon for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicedrhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time!